Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, October 16th, 2011. This is Sam Minter. I've got Yvonne Bo with me. Hello.
Hello.
And apologies once again. In the background, my son Alex is wandering around and may make noise. Anyway, we have an exciting show for you today. Let's see. We are going to talk about the Occupy protests going on now worldwide. We're briefly going to mention Obama's sending troops to Central Africa. Okay. An update on the Republicans. Yvonne's been paying attention and reading some of their stuff, apparently. And a little bit about the iPhone 4S and iOS 5. And finally, a little bit of a rant on some Android stuff related to something Yvonne's been reading. And that's the plan. So, Yvonne, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing all right. Actually, I was just arguing right now with something on the iOS right now, iOS 5. While you were, like, launching our show, I just got a dumbass error message. Oh, God. Okay. I don't know. So, anyway, but you know, this week had been... Well, it was quite an eventful week, I will say.
Yeah.
I think overall. I mean, news-wise, everything-wise. I mean, you know, we had a whole bunch of stuff. But, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm doing good, I would say.
Good. So let's start off with the protests. And by the way, I will also mention to you, Yvonne, stop manhandling your microphone. It's making lots of noise.
I haven't touched it. Actually, I know what happened. I'm accidentally hitting the volume control on it. Somehow.
That's better. Anyway, so protests. Occupy. Occupy is occupying everywhere now. They're occupying, started out at Wall Street, and now they're all over the place. They jumped.
Well, hell, they're even here in Fort Lauderdale and Miami. I mean, I don't know. They're all over the place.
There are a couple things here. One is still, and we haven't really talked about this. Last time I mentioned them, I was doing a solo show, really. We briefly talked about them last week, I guess, but we haven't really had a good discussion on what do these guys really want? What's going on with these protests? That's item A. Item B is how the authorities are reacting to it, which I think has been fairly incompetent in most cities. At least that's what the impression I've been getting. So first of all, let's start off with, you know, when I last spoke about these guys, I said it looks like, you know, really, in terms of what do these guys want, you know, it's primarily just they're expressing frustration, but there's not a coherent, you know, we want A, B, C, and D to happen. It's just a bunch of people expressing frustration with A, the growing economic inequality, B, the unemployment situation, C, the fact that, you know, the people who sort of caused the financial crisis of a couple years ago have basically survived unscathed and are now doing the same thing all over again.
Well, I think that, let's face it, you know, everybody talks about the economy is recovering to an extent, which it has been over the last 3 years. But I think that when you look at it in broad terms, you know, given where unemployment is, the lack of new jobs, the lack of resolution, a lot of the outstanding issues that were built up over the last number of years, even some stuff that has gotten worse. I mean, people don't feel that things are getting better. I mean, there was a poll recently that I saw that 73% of Americans think that the country is on the wrong track. I mean, 73%, for God's sakes.
Right.
I mean, for a nation that is, you know, normally an optimistic nation and always has been, when you get a number that staggeringly high, I mean, that's worrisome. And, you know, and people, let's face it, why would people feel that things are getting better? I mean, they, you know, look at the issues. Our debt soaring, difficulty for a lot of people to find jobs, salaries and wages that aren't going up, you know, healthcare, education more expensive, threats to benefits, threats. I mean, you think about it, even on the left and the right, it doesn't matter which way you are. I mean, you're feeling threatened one way or another. Okay? You know, a lot of people, you know, give an example. All these, for example, states that have passed very draconian laws curtailing collective bargaining. Okay? If you are a person who is, you know, on that side, on that group that has lived on that, certainly you're like, I mean, you're getting attacked viciously, okay, to some of your rights. You know, some of the other people that feel that, for example, government growth is encroaching. I mean, people, you know, that are in the Tea Party, I mean, they're feeling encroached and attacked. It seems like everybody has got, like, some reason to be deeply angry. And then you talk about the overall general problems that people are experiencing. And, you know, the feeling that, you know, honestly, we've been a new president close to 3 years running in power, and I don't think that anybody really feels that. I mean, I think the vast majority of Americans don't feel that we've done anything really to try to, you know, help people in general feel better about this. And the only people that seem to be making money and even a lot more than they used to be are, you know, it's like somebody said, we rescued all the banks, we rescued all these people, and, you know, they're all doing fine again. And you know what? What happened to the little guy?
Yeah.
I mean, all of a sudden you get Bank of America tacking on a $5 debit fee on every account, you know, just for the right to use a debit card, for God's sakes. And I'm like, okay, great. We rescued these banks at a truce of $700 billion, and these motherfuckers now are going to charge me every month $5 just for the right to use a debit card?
Yeah, they are.
But that's the general feeling. I think that's what people are, you know, this is what's driving the general mood.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, I've said I understand the frustration here. I mean, I understand there are lots of things to be frustrated about, and, you know, but what do you want people to do about it? I think that's the logical next step. And you know, if you read some of the protest signs, you see, like, ridiculous demands sometimes. But that's not, you know, serious, I think. You look at the situation, okay, what would you really do? What could you do here? What could you do here that has a realistic chance of actually happening? Like, it's not like we live in a dictatorship where Obama can wave his magic wand and do X, Y, or Z.
No, I agree. I agree on that, but I think that this week I was reading an article by Mortimer Zuckerman, who is a Democrat, very rich person, but, you know, owner of U.S. News and World Report. And his frustration, even though he's a person that voted for Obama, big supporter of the president, however, what he said was that, you know what, I mean, why – he feels that the White House, okay, has failed to go – to Congress and basically reach out and try to – basically that the president has not sat down with Congress to try to really directly bridge these differences and try to do some stuff that will move the country together forward. That he's been taking the bully pulpit and he's been taking addresses and he's been doing it from a distance, but that certainly it hasn't been a direct.
I think that's completely, like, right now it's bullshit. I think, because what's happened is lately in the last couple months, yes, that's exactly what President Obama has done. He's said, here's a bill, please pass it, use the bully pulpit, knowing full well that it wasn't going anywhere in Congress. But that's the change he made after people bitched at him for 2.5 years for actually slogging through the legislative process, which is what he spent the rest of the time doing,
right.
And is how he got the health care plan, is how he got a variety of other things done, which weren't what all of the liberals wanted, because guess what? In order to get it through, he actually had to... You know,
I agree. I know it's a difficult situation. I know. I think, but I think that even, like, you know what disappointed me is that even, like, right now, and maybe it's just a thing of, when you look at what has been managed to pass over the last 36 months, I think that a lot of stuff addressed certain things, but I still don't feel that we've gotten to address what really is hurting 75% of the American people. Okay.
Okay, but let's get to what would you actually want to see done?
I think that something. Here's one thing, for example. That I think the estimates are that 30 to 35% of homeowners in the U.S. are underwater under mortgages.
Yeah. Okay.
Bottom line. Yeah. Okay. I mean, 35% of the mortgages. I mean, that's affecting a huge proportion of the population. Okay.
But yeah, we haven't done anything about little about mortgage readjustments like that. Yeah.
Exactly right. Okay. There has been nothing done to address that. I mean, if I go, I actually, just for shits and giggles, I actually sent an email to the White House, okay, all right?
Okay.
To ask specifically about this, okay? And I will read you the response that I got did nothing to address the questions that I asked about, okay? And I'll, here it is, the White House, thank you for your message. And I'll read the canned response that I got, okay? Here's the thing, because I specifically wrote that I was not unemployed. Okay, all right. I'm not unemployed. I'm not on the streets. I don't have these problems. I know that, you know what? Whatever the heck problems I have are minuscule. Okay, but my feeling is that, you know what? If I feel like I'm struggling, okay. Oh, I mean, and this is all relative, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I'm not struggling. I mean, look, I know what I've seen the people struggling. I'm not struggling. Okay, all right. But my point is that there are people that are in a situation probably similar to mine. I've seen a lot of them that are really struggling because of these same handicaps, because the mortgage that they have on their house is worth a lot more, because they haven't been able to earn more money in the last few years, because. But I pointed this out, okay? And maybe they're still working and they haven't lost their job, but the healthcare is getting higher and all of this stuff, okay? All right, so I get this. Thank you for writing. I've heard from Americans who are unemployed, burdened by high medical bills, having difficulty paying their mortgage, or dealing with their loss of their income. I understand the daunting challenges faced across our country. Today, even as our economy recovers, many individuals or families are still struggling to stay in their homes or to find and move into an affordable house. As Prime Minister's comprehensive plan to stabilize the housing market, the Making Home Affordable program is helping responsible families avoid foreclosure by making payments more affordable and sustainable. But here's the problem. That program, okay, really addresses a very tiny slice of the people who are out there. It doesn't address 80 or 90% of people who are making their payments, who are staying in their houses, but just can't simply get their mortgages refinanced at a new lower rates, okay? And this is why it pisses me off, because I read this and I'm like, this is fucking, you know, and while many Americans have received help, far too many still cannot refinance their mortgage or obtain loan modifications. Okay, you know this. However, the rest of the programs you talk about don't do anything to address that. So if you know this, why the fuck haven't we done anything about it? And that's what really drives me crazy. And I haven't seen anybody propose anything to deal with this. Not the Republicans, not the Democrats, not anybody. And that's making people – that's one of the biggest things that making people struggle, okay, out there at this time. So, you know, I'm like – I feel like nobody gives a shit. I don't know. It's like they don't – I mean, that's – maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but it just doesn't seem like people are really addressing what's making most people angry. And I think that's what's making people even angrier.
And that's where we get to the protests again being mostly frustration. As opposed to, you know, we want X or we want Y or we want Z. You don't see people out there protesting saying, you know, pass law X or change regulation Y or whatever. They're just like, hey, over here, pay attention to us.
Right.
I guess.
That's what it feels like. I mean, and I think they're right to a certain extent.
Okay, so let's take a break for a second, and when we get back from the break, we'll shift to how these protests are being dealt with in the various cities, because I think that's part of this an important part of the story too. We'll be right back. After this exciting message, there we go.
Don't choke on me.
I'll try.
the test, Dracula.
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, we're back. So, I've been following examples in various cities. Like, apparently in Chicago, they arrested, like, 150 people last night. In New York, they were threatening to, but I guess they didn't in the end. Here in Seattle...
I will say this. I didn't realize that that park was private land. It wasn't really a public park.
Yeah. Well, and so that there's a little extra weirdness in New York.
Yeah.
Here in Seattle, although that's becoming more and more common, like... People are requiring, like, when as part of building projects, private
right.
building projects, you make some public space as part of it.
Right.
But anyway, yeah. Here in Seattle, they've been occupying a certain area, and they've been saying no tents. And so last night there were 150 tents or something set up in that area. And yeah, but they ended up not doing anything to them. But I think one of the things here is that you've got the authorities getting really antsy about these guys, and you had, like, a motorcycle cop run over some guy's foot in New York. You've had,
gee whiz. I mean, come on. I've been run over by a foot by friends of mine, for God's sake.
I don't think there was an implication it was on purpose, but there's video. The guy ran over the guy's foot. And then the guy started swearing at the cop, so the cop arrested him, or something like that.
Well, you think? Jesus Christ.
But anyway, you got a lot of tension building here, and you got the public authorities saying things like, okay, you got to leave at 11 o'clock, or you can't sleep here, or you can stay, but you can't sleep, or you have to do this, or why don't you move over there? And then they say no, and then, some authorities have been handling it better than others, but I think one of the fundamental things when you talk about, like, when we looked at these things happening overseas in Iran, Egypt, whatever, one of the things that kept saying sort of is like, okay, just leave them the fuck alone. They're protesting. Let them do their thing. They'll do it. Eventually they'll go away.
Unless they're violent or something or whatever.
Exactly.
Like in Rome, where apparently it turned into a fucking, full-scale riot. Okay, well, they have a right to protest. I mean, let them do it.
Yeah, I think fundamentally that's where I am. Unless they are actually being violent or are producing something that is a hazard to people who aren't involved... And I don't just mean somebody else can't go have a picnic in the park. I also sort of draw the line. Okay, if they start disrupting things for real, like you can't get from place A to place B anymore because these guys are in the way, or they start shutting down businesses or things like that. Okay, that also to me sort of crosses a line.
Well, let me put it to you this way: to me, as a business person that was once, I got thrown out of business by a whole bunch of protesters once. I mean, that's the reality. When my travel agency, you recall that I had the travel agency a long time ago.
Yeah.
I basically wound up selling the travel agency because basically employees of the Puerto Rico telephone company went on strike, and their method of protest was to start severing the fiber optic lines throughout Puerto Rico. Okay. And basically, what they did? They put me out of business. I mean, these fucking assholes put me out of business. Okay? I sympathize with what they were protesting against, but when they do something that winds up, I fucking did, and I wound up being put out of business because of these guys. I mean, I just, I'm sorry, but, that's just as disconsiderate as the policies that made them be protesting out there. Okay? I mean, so, sorry. I just, you know, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, if you've got a protest that's going to go and, like, cause a poor guy who maybe has a business just up the street from it to fucking be out of business, you know, because you guys decide, no. No, I'm sorry, no. That's just not right.
And I think that's probably part of the argument of the authorities who are, you know, trying to clear some of these spaces is that, you know, they are disruptive. You know, even if they stay on their little park, you know, they're still disruptive. You know, you're changing traffic patterns, you're doing this, you're doing that. But I think you have to have a certain level of tolerance and probably
higher. Well, when I went to Spain, for example, and I saw, you know, these protests, the police were there in presence and there was a certain level of tolerance. However, the protesters were in an area that was a pretty large public area where, you know, they were disrupting traffic and something and whatever, but they protested, spent their time there, they certainly got their publicity that they were looking for, et cetera and so forth, but they certainly didn't put out anybody out of business, okay? You know, I mean, it is what it is, you know, I think there's just got to be a certain threshold from, you know, when you go to having your voice heard and making sure that people know that when you're basically fucking with other people's livelihoods.
Right. Well, okay? and frankly, with a lot of these protests, I bet you a lot of the businesses around them, like restaurants and such, are having a ball.
Sure. It depends on what kind of business you have. You may be doing great or you may be doing awful, depending on what they're doing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But I think for the most part, authorities have been fairly restrained. But then you keep hearing reports about them being antsy and like, you know, everybody has to be out by 11 and then they don't do anything. Or like in Chicago, where they actually did round up 150 people last night. And I think that the right approach here is just in general to keep an eye on it, but let them do their thing.
Right.
Just back off. Let them do their thing. They're not hurting anybody. You know, and if they start hurting somebody, well, then that changes everything. But, I drove past where these guys were in Seattle yesterday or the day before sometime, and okay, they're having a little protest, they're shaking their little signs, okay, have fun, you know, I'm not going to join in, you know, but I'm all for letting them do their thing.
I agree.
Okay, so I think we've exhausted what we have to say about the protests for now. We'll see how they continue to evolve. You know, a couple weeks ago I was like, yeah, well, we'll see if this fizzles out or if it grows. And it's grown. The last couple weeks it's grown. We'll see if it continues to do so or whether we're peaking at some point. And speaking of peaking, let's move on to, you wanted to talk a little bit about the Republicans.
Well, here's one thing why I wanted to talk about the Republicans, talking a little bit about what's going on in politics right now. I think that one of the things So I started, like, for example, there was another debate this week, and, you know, as there's been all these freaking debates, and Herman Cain all of a sudden soared to be the leader of this ragtag pack, okay, at this point right now, with the 999 tax plan, you know, which apparently
999
after SimCity, you know, tax plan. Well, if you guys have played SimCity, I know I did, the standard default settings for taxes were 999. I mean, let's, you know.
I want to point out, for those of you who didn't catch it, a couple months ago in one of the first debates, someone after the debate pointed out that, you know, at one point Cain. Said something along the lines of, you know, and a wise man once said blah, blah, blah. And I don't remember what the quote was, but somebody looked up the quote and found out the source of that quote was actually from Pikachu the movie.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yes, it was from, right.
Anyway, so.
Yes, I forgot about that one.
Or so, Pokemon the movie, whatever.
Pokemon, right. It's from the Pokemon movie. So, I mean, you know, give me a fucking break. I mean, look, the 999 tax plan has to be the most regressive and punishing tax plan to anybody that makes under $50,000 a year ever proposed in the history of fucking mankind, okay? Because let's face it, if you put in a national 9% sales tax, do you think that states are going to remove their sales taxes? No. So you are going to have, say, your 6% and your 7% sales tax with another 9% sales tax on top, okay? So you're going to a taxation rate for the usual ordinary citizen of 15% on sales, okay? So let's start with a fucking 15% sales tax. Then you're adding 9% flat for everybody. Most of these people at this income range
don't pay
any tax. So you're jamming on top of the already fucking, on top of the 9%, you're jamming them on purpose. Then you're adding another 9% income tax on top of them. So you've just buried them in tax. Let's face it, they used to get money back. Now they're going to have to pay like 90%. You've jammed through a 30% tax increase on people? I mean, really? Mr. Kane? What the fuck is wrong with... I mean, honestly, obviously, this seems really to me that he fucking pulled it out of a fucking... You know, he sat down one day, it was playing SimCity, and decided, oh, this is pretty easy. Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, 999, that sounds good. Hey, it works. I'm being able to build my city.
Well, the truth of that is also, you know, funny. He has an advisor who came up with this thing. Who is not a trained economist. I think he's a financial advisor / hedge fund guy or something out of Chicago. I think he has an MBA or an accounting degree or something.
Well, they fucking need both their heads examined, okay?
You know,
I was watching a clip of on SNL last night. I guess they were making fun of this, and Kane's response was like... You know, it's like, well, fuck, I never thought anyone was going to take me seriously. I was like, of course none of this is going to stand up to scrutiny. I just made this whole thing up. So, I mean, okay, so that's your leader right now who's basically proposing a bunch of nonsense.
I just want to say for the record, the fact that, like, nobody believes Kane will actually maintain his lead in the polls. The fact that even for a moment this guy is actually at the top of the polls of potential Republican voters, that's just really, really. This is the guy. This is the joke vanity candidate.
I'm like, what the fuck? I mean, are we just this dearth of ideas? I mean, do we just have nothing?
Well, the reality, of course. Is that what the deal is? Is that, you know, Romney is basically tying up the sort of serious discussion, but you've got this huge swath of Republicans who want anything but Romney.
Dude, here's the thing. I was reading, but this is so I go and I'm like, you know, I see that everybody keeps saying Romney the inevitable. Romney, Romney, Romney. Yeah. Okay, so I went, let me read Romney's platform, okay? To be honest, it is the most shallow shell of a platform I've seen. He's not proposing... Oh, a third of it is just meant to say, Obama fucked up, okay? Yeah. With facts that aren't very good, mind you. Facts that are actually erroneous and bogus, okay? A certain extent. Saying that he fucked up, okay? He starts off actually pretty okay. He talks about how, well, you know, the policies that President Bush and Obama did at the beginning of the financial crisis probably helped divert the nation to go into a fucking, you know, tailspin and a disaster. Okay. But then he says that everything else he did fucked up and throws up some bogus statistics, which really are just totally bogus, but spends that entire time just saying that. Okay, so great. All right. Beautiful. Okay, fine. Say he fucked up. Tell me what you're going to do. Dude, if you read a whole bunch of the stuff that he mentions, it almost sounds some of the same shit that Obama's proposing, just with a different twist. Tax reform. Employee retraining. He says that he's going to repeal Obama. He complains that medical costs are rising, and it says, you know, he'll end Obamacare. Doesn't say what he's going to replace it with. Okay? You know, and I'm like, I'm reading it,
The actual thing he said is that he would provide waivers for the 50 states on his first day in office. And if you look into what that means, the way the waivers are written in the plan says the states can do something else as long as what the states each do individually ensures at least the same number of people or more and a few other constraints that basically mean these waivers would require each individual state to come up with something that basically replicated...
Does the same thing.
Does the same thing, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just nonsense. I mean, I read his platform and I finished reading it and now I know why the Republicans, none of them want to vote for him. First of all, he doesn't even cater... Look, he does no mention of immigration. He does no mention of... What was the other hot button topic? Anything regarding social issues, I noticed on the issues. When he looked to his issues page, there's like, you know, none of these subjects that all the fucking like diehard Republicans love, like abortion, this and that or whatever. It's not in his issues page. I mean, maybe I read it wrong, but I went through it and I didn't see it.
No, okay? I don't think you did. And here's the fundamental thing about Romney. And you know, let's say he did win, he'd be very beholden to the right wing anyway for getting him there. But you know, the man's a moderate.
Yes, man's a moderate.
For God's sake,
Republicans haven't supported a fucking moderate.
He was governor of
Massachusetts,
which is one of the most liberal states in the country.
Exactly.
And in order to be governor of Massachusetts, he had to be a moderate. Yeah,
there's no other way. That's right.
You know, it's just like, you know, Senator Scott Brown. Also, you know, people were like, you know, when the Republicans took over the Senate, well. Or got to 60 votes in the Senate, or whatever it was.
Right, and Brown hasn't voted conservative overall. He's voted moderate.
Yeah, and so actually it was the Democrats losing their 60-vote majority at that point.
Right.
But anyway, the point is, you know, Romney's whole deal is to sort of actually stay sort of under the radar, be the inevitable candidate, be solid in the debates, and, you know, make it so that everybody else sort of just... falls away, and he's the only one left.
Okay, the only look. Let me put it to you this way: looking at his platform and looking what it is. If you are a mainstream American, okay,
yeah.
All right, moderate American, okay, the only reason that you would wind up voting for Romney, okay, is basically because you feel that he is a better manager.
Or just as a protest, like Romney
just
is
a protest.
But look, of all the Republican candidates, Romney is the one and only one. Well, with the exception of people like Huntsman and stuff who have no chance, but who is the kind that a moderate centrist American would
could
be like
vote for without scaring himself shitless.
Right, and so. Yeah, this is why if you look at the polls, when they do head-to-heads against various Republicans versus Obama, all the other Republicans are way behind. Romney is like neck and neck with Obama.
Right.
You know, and Romney is the one candidate here, you know, absent a complete and total financial meltdown, that could beat Obama. And, you know, if they nominate Romney, you know, I've seen estimates saying that, you know, Obama's re-election chances are as low as 40%, given the economic fundamentals.
Because the problem that he's got right now, Obama, is just that he is not being seen as providing leadership, damn it.
Right.
He's not doing it.
And so if you end up with Obama versus Romney, Romney has a very good shot at winning. I'd actually give him odds. He's more likely to win than to lose if it ends up being Obama-Romney. Now... there's a lot to happen in a campaign, and Obama's a really good campaigner, so I would not be counting him out.
This is way too early, but my point is that right now, if they keep going the way they're going right now in the White House, I mean, if Romney becomes a candidate, I don't see how the fuck Obama wins.
Yeah.
Because to make a case to the nation that he should stay.
Romney is the one Republican running right now who can beat Obama and has a very good shot at beating Obama. And so, you know, you get the Republicans dicking around with Kane. Here's the thing with this. Like, the fundamental question that, you know, Republican primary voters have to start asking, and I got to think at some point they're going to start asking this question, is do we want a candidate who... is in some sense a radical ideological Puritan, or do we want somebody who can win?
Kane! I don't know. It does sound like a good name to be like yelling like in a rant, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You get a whole bunch of angry frothing about people saying, Kane! I mean, it's just, that works, but other than that, Jesus Christ.
I mean, if you asked me to make the prediction, and I won't make my official prediction until like December, until like right before the Iowa primary or Iowa caucus, because that's what I did 4 years ago, is like on the evening before the Iowa caucus, I made my official predictions for the election, and I think I'll do the same thing here.
Or the caucus, depending on.
But if you had to make me predict right now, I would say Romney gets a Republican nomination and Romney wins the presidency.
Right now, the way things are going, but, you know, it's way too early.
It is way too early.
Okay, all right, but, you know. So, okay, all right, so that's the Republican.
But now, on the other hand, I have to admit, it would be really entertaining to have the final conflict be Obama versus Kane or Obama versus Bachman or something like that. You know.
Yes, that would be quite entertaining, yes.
You know,
I think that we are going to get quite a lot of entertainment of this all the way through the end of the primaries, because all of these bozos are not dropping out anytime soon.
Yeah.
It's going to be quite entertaining.
I'll of course add, you know, the sort of thing that junkies like me always wish for, which it would be absolutely awesome if we get to the Republican convention without anybody having a majority.
I think that this year will not be as close as it was the last time. I think that this time around, this is going to be a knockout relatively early for a couple of reasons. Florida and some big states decided to move the primary so early.
Right. There's also a thing in terms of, and I haven't dug in yet to the details of this, but the Republicans have some strange rules about which states are proportional and which states are winner takes all. The Republicans last time around wrapped it up a lot earlier because they had a lot of winner take all states.
That's right.
But a bunch of the early states, and I think the Republican rules actually say that anybody who has their primary caucus before a certain date has to be proportional. So that may stretch things out, but I don't know. They're still moving these things around, you know.
Yeah, Florida's moving, Utah's moving. They're still changing dates. Still fucking around with it. Yep.
So we shall see. But it looks like we're going to have another early start because once again, everybody's moving to get as early as possible.
Yeah.
And so it looks like we're going to have, you know, we may have Iowa and New Hampshire, you know, around Christmas, New Year's again. So.
Well. We shall see.
Okay, let's move on. Enough about the Republicans, and we've taken a long time on the last couple segments. It's time for a break. It's time for your poem of the week. I think there's still poems of the week. We're getting close to the end, but we'll take a break real quick, and then we will come back and talk about something else. Okay, break, poem, thing.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by No-Tell Motel.
Zurichhorn by Jill Alexander Esbaum. Trep im Abendlich Spatherbist. The black vast of night isn't yet. You look to the lake, the light plays its trick. It's the one where the woman's sawn in two, where she goes into a swoon that intuits her stint in the sad house. And dawn is a lousy dozen hours away. How many days will it take to undo these undue wreckings? You rack your red wrong worry and sieve for an answer that lives but to grieve it. Look, look, look to the lake, then leave it.
For more like this, go to notellmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
A quick note before we return to the show proper. This indeed was the last poem of the week for Curmudgeon's Corner. No-Tell Motel, the site that has provided these poems, is closing its doors after 7 years. Rebecca, our friend, and the other woman who ran the site, Molly Arden, I believe, decided that after 7 years, it was a good run and it was time to move on to other projects. So congratulations to them for 7 years of a site that I gather has become very popular in the poetry community. Thank you as well for providing interesting middle of the show breaks for the last couple years. There goes the poem of the week. Thanks again, Rebecca, for letting us do this. And now, back to the show. And here we are. Okay, we talked about the protests. We talked about the Republicans. One quickie, because I don't know enough details to know what the fuck is really going on. But the president has ordered 100 combat troops to somewhere in Africa.
Well, I read a little bit that it wasn't exactly combat troops.
No, they are combat-equipped advisors. So they're going there for the purpose of helping out indigenous forces to root out some guy who sounds like he's a really awful person. No qualms about that. And they are authorized, I guess, they are not going to be taking offensive action, but they are authorized to, you know, defend themselves.
Shoot in self-defense, okay.
Yeah, basically.
I know nothing about this. I don't know nothing about who the whatever the guy is. I gotta admit that I did see the news clip, but I did not take the time to.
Well, and without digging into it in deep, I just want to reiterate my general discomfort with the level of executive power that's being taken into account here, because this is exactly the kind of situation, you know, all of a sudden out of left field. You know, we're sending troops in someplace that, you know, most Americans have no idea what's going on, have no idea what the involvement is, XYZ. And there was, you know, there was, in this case, you know, often when we, you know, even in the case of like Libya or the last involvements, before you actually kick up the event, there's like a build-up where we start learning about this horrible guy and what he's doing, and he's threatening his own people and this and that, and there's sort of a process, but here none of that. It's just like, oh yeah, here we go.
Yeah, well, but I don't know. We've sent advisors many times before.
Yeah, we have, but look.
And without, I mean, I don't know if sending advisors is something that requires congressional approval, I guess.
I don't. Probably not. But at least, like, but at least sort of like public awareness of some sort, or telling, I don't know. It just seems like we're once again, and I'm not making a judgment on the cause. Like I said, from everything I've seen, we're sending people in to help get rid of somebody who sounds like he really is a pariah and does all kinds of awful things. So maybe the cause is fine, but yeah, it just seems like it's another example of having decision-making on potentially important events be very, very closely concentrated in the president, and I don't like that. I just am uncomfortable with it. I think these decisions have to be more widespread. There has to be more public consensus. You know, even if this one isn't one that requires a declaration of war from Congress or anything like that, there should just be a little bit more involvement. I don't know. I don't know. It just makes me very uneasy. Like, all of the things where the president feels complete impunity to act on their own with no consultation from anybody on a huge range of actions. And I think it's too wide a range of actions. I think that needs to be far more constrained than it is. But, yeah. Okay, that's all I have to say about that. Shall we move on?
Yes.
Okay. First of all, iPhone 4S, did you get one? You were going to go run out and get one as soon as they were available.
No, I said I was going to get one, but let me just be
you said
clear
as
about
soon
that.
As they were available, so I expected that you were sitting in
I
line
did
at
not,
some mall.
I thought about going to the store and picking one up. There's too many fucking people. I'm not a guy to make lines. So I'm going to wait until the lines die down a little bit and then go get one.
I will point out that once again, for like as he's done for every iPhone launch so far, Steve Wozniak was first in line at his local mall.
Yeah.
And, like, camping out 48 hours in advance.
Well, I guess he enjoys that. I'm not the camping out guy.
So you don't have one yet.
I don't have one yet. However, what I did do was I did update all my devices to iOS 5. I did do that.
So I updated my iPhone to iOS 5. Nobody else in the family has yet. And the one thing I noted, like, you know, because I updated to iOS 5. I updated to Lion 10.7.2. I updated my iPhoto. I transitioned from my .Mac or Mobile Me account to iCloud. Did all of this stuff. And it was more painful than it should be.
You think? I thought it was okay.
Look, it was relatively smooth for me. Like, I at no point in the process was I horribly confused. Some steps took a while.
I will say it was lengthy.
Lengthy, but like, but I looked at this in this way. Like, I had no problems. It went relatively smoothly for me. I didn't have any big errors that I had to figure out. I just kept plodding along and following the instructions. For the most part, there was one glitchy stuff. Turning on iCloud, I had to do something a little weird.
I have one glitch I forgot to mention, but it wasn't... Well, okay, it's a strange glitch. The AC power adapter on my laptop died during the update of my phone. The AC adapter itself broke, okay?
Nice.
Well, I did not notice this, okay? So the computer's plugged in, and it's doing the update, okay? And all of a sudden, unexpectedly, I walk back to the computer, and it's in standby. And I'm like, what the fuck? And it's plugged in. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And thankfully, it happened while it was just restoring her music.
Right.
Okay? So I was able to turn the computer back on and just, you know, finish it, and that was that. But
my weird glitch.
I was like, oh, my God, I almost freaking had a conniption. But I realized that.
My weird glitch was going back and forth between a couple control panels before Mobile Me was fully set up properly. Because at one point it said, you should now get the following message on your computer, and I didn't. Mm-hmm. And so I had to initiate something manually. But my main thought on these, though, were like, you know, if this was going to happen for my wife, my daughter, or my mother, would...
I think that I saw a lot of average people this week that I spoke to already on Friday that did the update.
Let me ask, because here the complications for me were primarily due to the fact that I already had a Mobile Me account. If I was setting up a new...
But I think most people don't. I think that's right. The reason. I think that's why it wasn't such a big deal.
Because I could see this being really confusing. But again, you're right. Most people don't already have a Mobile Me account. I mean, you had to pay for it. You know,
right.
Previous to this.
And that's why I think that for most people hasn't been an issue, because I actually spoke to a lot of people that I met at the office who are not, let's say, technically savvy to any extent, and they had done their iOS 5 updates without a major hassle. The only complaint that they had was just the time it took to download and to get it on. That's all.
So let me talk about the update itself for a little bit. I'm happy with the update. I mean, a lot of people are excited about the notifications. I'm like, okay, it's better notifications. I can see that, but I'm not like super excited about it. The thing that I am enjoying the most is the wireless update, the wireless sync with my computer.
Yeah, I gotta admit that's sweet. And although I
am annoyed that it gets triggered by you plugging the phone in. I would like it to be triggered
as
soon as it...
You know what? I saw it, but you can launch it manually.
You can launch it manually, but the behavior I want is as soon as I walk in the door at home and the thing recognizes that it's on its
home. I actually agree with this, okay? Because you don't want that fucking thing syncing all the time, so you're draining the battery. I agree. I mean, the one thing I do when I get home... Well, you don't do this, but I do, because I didn't do last night, which unfortunately led to my phone right now being... dead. I hadn't noticed.
Well, I plug in every night.
Just to plug in my phone.
Yes, I plug in every night. I don't necessarily plug in as soon as I get home, but I plug in every night when I go to sleep religiously.
So you plug in, exactly, and then you'll get your sync. It makes sense.
Yeah, now the one other thing I noticed is PhotoStream does not do movies.
No.
So I was really excited that with this, I would never have to plug into my computer again. It would just do everything. Not quite. If I've taken movies on my phone... I still have to plug in with the wire to suck those into iPhoto.
Okay, that sucks. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm like, oh, really? Come on, you're on Wi-Fi. You're requiring it to be on Wi-Fi anyway.
Right.
Suck up the stupid movie.
I hear you.
Yeah, so. but overall, I like the update. It's nice. Are there There's supposedly tons and tons of new features. I haven't really encountered too many of them. I like the wireless sync. The notifications are okay. I don't have a 4S, so I can't play with Siri, you know. Any other things about the update strike you?
Well, I was going to mention something, but of course I can't fire up my phone because the battery's dead. So, I don't know.
And by the way, your microphone noise is really loud again. Anyway.
I haven't touched it. I'm wearing the one that I have around with the headset.
I don't know. I can't tell you. But anyway, it's probably just the wire moving or something. Anyway, so you wanted to mention briefly about sales of the iPhone 4S, which of course everybody. Just to repeat, when this first thing came out, the tech press was all about how much of a disappointment this thing was.
Yeah, well, it was a disappointment. Apparently, it's just led to a complete blowout, where everybody is running out of the damn phone. Okay, it's just. You know, especially what I heard is that Sprint, like, ran out of it. Like, oh, my God. It's like, you know, there was the second coming of Jesus.
Of course, because Sprint couldn't get any iPhone before. And now
right.
That
and it just turned into a enormous blockbuster for Sprint. Sales have been through the roof. And, you know, I think that the people that were underwhelmed by it, I think it was just a thing of expectations, I guess. I don't know. Because
they called it a 4S instead of a 5.
Pretty much. They could have called it a 5 and it would have been all fine and dandy.
It is an incremental release. I mean, you know, Apple has followed a pattern, and I've seen a number of people point this out. It's every other release that's the really big, big one.
That's right.
Even going back to the original iPhone was... somewhat hobbled. It wasn't 3G yet. There was no App Store yet. Things like that. But they got it out the door. Then the 3G was the big one that all of a sudden added a whole bunch of features and people were very excited about. Then the 3GS, people were like, okay, it's a little faster. Then people were really excited about the 4. And then now the 4S, people are like, okay, it's faster. It's got this Siri thing. And next year, we'll have the 5 and it'll be a the case will be different and there'll be much more substantial revisions, I guess. At least that's if the pattern follows. And, you know, we said last week, like, if you don't have an iPhone or if your iPhone is more than one generation old, this is the perfect time to upgrade.
Yep.
But, you know, if you have an iPhone 4, you know, you're going to stick with that iPhone 4 a little while longer.
Yep.
Yeah, so...
I agree. I mean, if you got an iPhone 4, I don't see the need to rush out and, like, urge to get one. I agree. So.
Anything else on that? Or shall we?
Nope.
Okay, let's take another quick break. And then we will come back. And Yvonne has a rant about Android that he read and enjoyed and wants to share. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes. You heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show. And here we are. Yvonne, something about how Android sucks.
Okay, so there's this article I was reading on CNETnews.com, and the the title of it is "Dear Android, This Is Your Last Chance." Okay.
Okay. And who's it by, and when? What was the date?
It's by Molly Wood. It was written on October 14th. Okay. And it says here, the morning of October 4th, I had my credit card in hand, ready to buy an iPhone 5 and wave goodbye to Android forever. Sadly. But this seems moronic to me. The iPhone 4S isn't quite what I'd hoped for. It's too expensive for the high-capacity models I'd prefer. I'm like, okay. I want a bigger screen. There's no 4G, and I'd hope for it integrated turn-by-turn directions. And I'm like, okay. The 4S left less an opening for Android to re-itself so that will win my continued loyalty. But it's a tiny opening. Indeed, this is Android's last chance, and here's why. Okay? I've written about this problem before, and it's still a problem. Sure, it's a problem Google has pledged to address by forming the Android Update Alliance back in May. Google announced it would work with manufacturers and carriers to deliver timelier updates on a standardized schedule and to keep updating every device for at least 18 months after its creation. This seemed like good news and pretty straightforward acknowledgement that fragmentation was a serious problem, and one that was driving consumers batty. As of August, progress was spotty and abysmal at T-Mobile and Verizon, where Android and Me found that only a fraction of phones with those carriers were running the latest version of Android. I'm looking at this right now. It appears that a phone sold by, if you look at Samsung, Sony Ericsson, Motorola, LG, Kyocera, Huawei, the highest percentage of phones running the latest version, I mean, this is the highest. This is like one model by HTC is 12%. Okay? On average, less than 5% of Android phones are running the latest software version. So that means if you've got a really buggy release that you got on your phone.
What's that compared to, like, iPhones again?
iPhones, like, I don't know what it is, but I know that it is. The thing is that because iPhone updates arrive from you in iTunes, so therefore you get them automatically, it's a far. I mean, I think iPhone adoption of current software versions, like, for your phone, well north of 50%.
Well, yes. And also, of course, Apple pushes them out to all the Apple phones. You don't have this extra step of Samsung deciding that it's ready to push the update.
Exactly, and that's the biggest problem. And that's the problem where they have right now with this. Okay, but even like if you own the phone, okay, here's the other problem they're talking about. Support. You get a phone. Okay, and there's a problem, right? Okay. You call, say, your carrier, they can't support it. You call Samsung, they're like, it's a Google problem. You call Google, there's nobody to call at Google. Okay? All right? That's the problem. So when people have a problem with a phone, it's just there is no way to go and, like, get you help to fix it. Okay? And it's just a mess, okay? It just creates, like, a complaint of a terrible customer experience, okay? Here's the gist of it. Smartphones are complicated devices running complicated software. Android is further complicated by, as I mentioned, fragmentation. Don't make me wrong. I prefer and appreciate the open-ish nature of Android and the ability to get lots of kind of apps. But when something goes wrong with my phone, I want someone to call. And Verizon isn't in the business of habit of supporting software. The manufacturers seem well out of their depth in terms of support, and Google is no help at all, okay? And so, you know, so this is the thing. And then they're mentioning, for example, that there was this update in June called Froyo, okay,
yep,
all right?
Yep.
Okay, that came out for the phone. And it says, here are the Froyo 2.2.1 features removed or broken with this latest update. We call it Gingerbread, okay? All right, 2.3.3, okay? All right? And this is not an all-encompassing list, but just part of them. Some users report that their phones randomly reboot throughout the day with GB 2.3.3, okay? Some users report that their phones unexpectedly restart shortly after they've been turned off, okay? Some users report that their phones hang at startup after a red-eye animation. Their screen goes black and stays black. When this happens, the hard buttons are lit, so the phone is still on. The remedy is to remove the battery and to try to start the phone again. Sometimes this takes several attempts before it makes it to the home screen. Some users experience weaker 3G signals, drops to 1X. Some of the same users have found that either wiping the cache partition or performing factory reset or both corrects these problems. Some users report sudden loss of all 3G signal. Some users report trouble placing voice calls. They immediately disconnect the listed duration of 0 seconds. Some users report that they are unable to make an outgoing voice call until they reboot their phone. This must be done each time before every call, okay? Some users report that they have trouble hanging up, ending a voice call when connected to an answering machine. The remedy seems to press either the end call button or the power button for at least 5 to 10 seconds. Some users report that a second voice call will break in while they are leaving a voicemail message to a call. It is very embarrassing to finally find yourself talking to someone else when you are in the middle of leaving a message. Battery life under, you know, and then a battery life problem. And then, actually, there's a longer list. But the bottom line, you get the picture, okay? All right? I mean, some of these things, I mean, shit, I read some of this shit. This is shit I experienced with Windows Mobile, for God's sakes. It doesn't seem to be all that much better, if I'm honest.
So, no, I mean, I don't know. I know a lot of people love, you know, the Android experience. I've never seen the appeal. I don't know.
I mean, it's just all these people. Okay, great. I mean, there's a lot of people that love to be able to hack their phones to do all this stuff and all this stuff. Well, that's great. That's beautiful. Congratulations. You know,
there are a lot of tiny minority.
Okay, but
there are a lot of normal people going after these Android phones too. I know my wife's mom has one.
Okay.
And I don't understand why, but she does. She is all anti. Doesn't want an iPhone, doesn't want Apple, and I guess that's part of the reason. It's like the reaction against, like, I don't want any of those Apple things, so what's the best thing you give me that's not one of those?
You know, here's the thing, because the reasons why she says that she doesn't buy one, it's just, let's face it, the lack of 4G. Honestly, when you're web surfing on a phone and pulling stuff up on a phone, I mean...
Well, not to mention if your carrier is capping your bandwidth, then
right.
you'll use up your monthly allotment in like an hour.
Are you really going to notice 4G on a regular basis that you're missing it?
Look, I'm all for
I'm all for speed, but
yeah.
I mean, you know, the small screen. Look, it's a phone. It's supposed to fit in your pocket. Okay, all right. I've seen some of these freaking bigger phones. Honestly, they seem uncomfortable to me. Might as well go back to having the brick I had like 20 years ago.
And, you know, someone was pointing out, I saw this on Gruber on Daring Fireball, but he was repeating it from elsewhere. Somebody did a nice little graphic showing basically with the iPhone-sized screen, you can reach the entire screen with a normal-sized thumb. Mm. With these bigger screens, you just can't. You have to, like... hold it differently, use two hands, do something. But you can use an iPhone, as long as you don't have, like, really tiny thumbs,
you can use an iPhone with one hand. And
basically use it with one hand. And, you know, and he also pointed out, like, people are clamoring for them to release an iPhone with a bigger screen, but this is probably one of those things that, like, fits into the whole, you know, as we've been talking about Steve Jobs, the sort of Steve Jobs philosophy of things, which is they probably did a bunch of research and a bunch of different prototypes with different size screens and determined that for a phone, this size was best.
Right.
And so they're like, this is what size an iPhone will be. And that's it. And right. They'll change all sorts of other things. They'll enhance all kinds of things. But they probably won't change the size of the screen. They've made it higher resolution. They've done other things. But, you know, they're probably going to be like, look, here's your iPhone. This is the right size for a phone. We are convinced this is the right size for a phone. If you want something bigger, get an iPad.
Right. It's exactly right, because honestly, putting in a screen that adds an extra inch, honestly, doesn't really – what does it get you? It gets you a bigger phone and makes you get a little bit more screen real estate, but when you have the high-resolution screen on the 4, I mean, honestly, the tiny print on there is easy to read for me. I mean, my wife has a 4. That's why I know this. And I'm like, but you're not gaining enough. I mean, honestly, it's like it's just by adding a couple of extra inches. It's not really worth, to me at least, having a bulkier phone. It just is not. I prefer a smaller phone.
I mean, the one thing people have speculated on is people have been speculating about the bigger iPhone. You also have people speculating about the smaller iPhone.
Right. Know?
But
well, let's face it, because like I've said before, I think that, I mean, maybe, okay, no, I think that the iPhone itself probably matches about the size of the StarTAC that I used to have. Okay? No, I think the StarTAC was actually smaller. Mm-hmm. I had the one with a really thin battery. And honestly, I was always a fan of a fucking smaller phone. The smaller, the better. Okay? What the hell do I want a clunky big thing? Matter of fact, I have a BlackBerry Pearl that I used to have that I have it over here. I mean, you know, the iPhone is, I mean, it's about 20% bigger than the Pearl. So, I, you know what? I don't like big phones. Okay, all right? And I think most people prefer, you're putting it in your pocket, you've got it somewhere. You don't want this big thing that's clunky. Okay,
you know, maybe some people do. Because honestly, you can. You can get an iPad with 3G,
right.
Install Skype on it, and right. Use it as a phone.
Voila! You knock yourself out. So anyway, so that was the thing.
And I have a nice big screen. Reading,
but the one thing is that I see this a person who obviously is having a very frustrating life experience with Android. Okay, all right. I mean, you can see how bad it is to them. Okay, the technical problems, the glitches,
and yet they won't move.
And yet they won't move. I mean, you know, I mean, I can't imagine living with all these bugs. I did for a while on Windows. I wanted to fucking, like, grab a hammer, like, fucking, like, smash the thing to bits every time I had it. The first opportunity that I got to be able to get rid of that fucking Windows phone, I did it in 2 seconds.
Well, and that all comes back to, I think, a significant portion of, at least in the tech press. Like, I can't speak to all the, you know, sort of regular people. But in the tech press, it's a philosophical, you know, Windows, Mac, you know, kind of thing. It's You know, it's not...
It's not logical.
Part of it's about the features of the phone and things they want, blah, blah, blah. But a big part of it is they don't want to buy in to the Apple world. They don't see themselves as part of that. And I think a lot of the... non-tech geek people probably fit that category too. It's like, you know, they see the people all passionate about their Apple products and they feel some sort of distaste at that. And
by the way, I think most of them are loonies. Okay, all right. Look, I think they are. Believe me, look, you're not. Look, I am a guy who has all had a Mac for 22 years. Okay, all right. I have. But for example, I am not a fucking religious about it. I actually have I work on a Windows computer at work, and there's a Windows PC that's sitting here in my office, along with a Mac on the other side, and some other stuff and whatever, and, you know, look, I am an Apple shareholder for a long time, believe me, I believe in the company and all this stuff, but, these fucking guys that are camping out in front of a fucking store, for God's sakes, to get a fucking brand new phone, get a fucking life, for God's sakes! Really? My God! You know? Jesus.
So I will say that I did wait in line at an Apple store once for it was pre-iPhone. It was for Jaguar, maybe one of the Mac OS releases. I actually I didn't wait in line days or anything, but I went to the Apple store on opening day. It was an event. It was interesting. You know, people, it was like a little mini party, and they handed out little, like, gifts to the people who'd waited in line. I got little dog tags or something with a Mac OS X on it. It was fun. I have only done it once, though. And, of course, the thing of that was, you know, I waited in line, I got the CDs, but I was on the way for a trip somewhere, and so I didn't have a chance to do anything with it, for a week anyway. And then when I finally went to try to install the update on my computer, which was a laptop at this point, like 5 years ago more, I found out that my DVD drive was broken. and so I couldn't do jack until like way later when I found a way around that. So anyway.
Right. Well, on that note,
I think we have a show.
We have a show. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And as usual, email me at owlsman@owlsman.com with any questions, comments, thoughts. And in the meantime, tell your friends to listen to and tune in next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.